Hello, I'm Douglas Kretz, and this is Startup Stories, where we're talking to the newest startup founders around the world about the cool things they're doing with Microsoft. Today I'm with Deepak Rao, who is the Chief Revenue Officer of Solomo. Thanks for coming, Deepak. So what is Solomo, for those of us who don't know?
Solomo is a cloud-based platform that allows brands to connect with their consumers digitally when they are within their space. Mm-hmm. So basically what we do is we can leverage the Wi-Fi network and triangulate and locate smart devices very accurately. And then we have a rules-based engine that can send content to that device based on exactly where the device is based.
Okay.
And then we collect a whole bunch of analytics associated with the movement of that device within that space.
Okay, so give me a real-life example. You have customers, yep. American Airlines, Harley-Davidson.
Sure.
They're using mobile phones, they're using yep. geolocation, they're using the cloud. How does that work?
Yeah. So the use cases span multiple industries, retail, airlines, automotive, et cetera. So in a retail environment, if you can imagine walking into a store and then based on exactly where you are inside the store getting different content. So if you're in the shoe department, the retailer can send you information or coupons about shoes. If you walk a few more steps and you're in front of the TVs, you'll get content related to TVs. And we are capturing your path of travel and your dwell time, how much time you're spending, and the retailer can then keep customizing the content on your mobile device or on a second screen that is inside the store based on your presence.
Right.
So that's a very typical retail use case for
us. And then
us.
How is that working? Technology-wise, yep. I walk in the store, the app registers that I'm in the store somehow, pings the cloud, and then they have a database, I'm sure, and then...
Correct. So the way it works is you have the retailer's or the brand's application on your device. So as soon as you walk in, we recognize you because your phone is actually sending a Wi-Fi beacon out. So we recognize that you are inside the store, and we know that you have the retailer's app on your phone, and that's how the interaction starts. We are very, very clear about one thing, that we want the consumer to know at all times that they are exchanging information with us. So we don't want to do anything behind their back.
Yeah.
So privacy is of utmost importance to us. So hence we ping the customer or notify the customer that they are eligible for offers, and only if they opt in will their experience change when they are inside the store. If they choose to ignore it, then of course we will not bother them.
Yeah. And so is there any rationale there for why you're also working on building Windows app? Do I understand that correctly?
Yes. So the use cases there are in a retail environment, the store associate can have a Windows 8 tablet app that can track and monitor their high-value customers or areas within the store where customers are congregating and may need additional assistance. They can look up inventory and do other things through this tablet application.
Cool.
There are other use cases in airlines where the airline can track pilots and crew members when they are inside the terminal and provide services to them that will help speed up on-time departures, as well as help gate agents locate where crew members are. There are use cases around providing services to their highest value customers, their elite frequent flyers, and to ensure that they don't miss their flight or to provide services to them. There are use cases within hospitals where it's being used for patient education. So everybody has had this experience of waiting for a significant amount of time for their physician to see their physician. So the hospital can use that captive audience, so to speak, to provide patient education while they are inside their clinic. There are use cases in around event marketing. So we have companies like Harley-Davidson using us to monitor traffic that comes through their display booth during events.
Oh, cool.
And provide services to those customers who have downloaded the Harley-Davidson app.
So truly kind of making the smartphone smart.
Correct.
With the consumer. I just gave you a little marketing. That's great. So I want to get into this history of what got you here.
Yeah.
But I want to start with, What gave you this idea precisely before we get into like how you got here to Chicago?
So what brought this idea about was we noticed this trend that firstly, everybody's carrying a smartphone now. So that's taken for granted. And Wi-Fi has become ubiquitous too. So the combination of those two is how do we leverage that? Now that people have invested in all this technology and people are carrying their own personal device, how do you make things easier for them? Was the sort of the origin of this idea. Mm-hmm. And we talked to retailers first, and we asked them about how we could help them because we were doing a few consulting projects with them. And they were very interested in sending mobile ads and coupons and things like that to people while they were inside the store.
You got to get people to consume, right?
Exactly. So the thing that we heard over and over again is that we as retailers have figured out how to interact with people on the web. So when they are at home on their PC, on their laptop, we figured that out. But we still don't know who actually walks into the store and what they do when once they are inside the store. So that was the problem we started to address. Yeah. And that's how we came up with this platform with the rules engine to send content.
I feel like, though, that your brain was primed for coming up with a really like hot startup idea because you've done two other startups before, right?
Correct.
So you had one called Consilium.
Yep.
How did that start? Where was that?
That was in the Bay Area. This was in the late 80s, and that was in the manufacturing execution space. Mm-hmm. And that was started by a professor at UC Berkeley.
Where you were an engineering student for your PhD, right?
Yes, and so he had this idea, and it was based on his research about creating efficiencies on the factory floor, and in the late 80s, that was a big deal. And so that's how that startup was created.
Yeah, it was also created because you got tired of going to UC Berkeley, which is probably not what any parent wants to hear. But you, do you drop out of your PhD program?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had been in academia for a very long time, and or all my life essentially, all my adult life at least, and I was looking to do something in the real world.
Yeah. So you got into Consilium, you helped build that up, and then you IPO'd.
Yes.
And then what happened after that?
After that, I joined Oracle.
Yeah.
And Oracle was just starting to get into the manufacturing application space. So I was one of the early people on the application side of Oracle in Chicago. And this was in the heydays of the ERP and the Y2K problem and so on. So I had an excellent career at Oracle and grew and built up a team and so on.
Yeah.
And sort of the same story.
You
repeated.
Got the itch again,
yes.
Didn't you? So
yes.
What happened? I mean, this is what I think is interesting about you. Yeah. This is you seem to be a guy, you also worked for Microsoft for 10
Correct.
Years, right? But you seem to be a guy who never got this sort of itch out of his brain of like, I can really make these startups. I mean, the second one, what happened to that? That one crashed and burned, basically.
Exactly. So it was a sort of similar story to several others in that era, where we raised a lot of money, had some early success, but because the market that we were selling into that, which was mainly high-tech manufacturers and telecom equipment vendors, their business was not doing very well, or their business, that's putting it mildly, their business tanked, and consequently our application wasn't successful or didn't get rolled out. And so we essentially ran out of money.
And that wasn't pretty, I'm assuming, right?
It was very ugly and it was very hard because we, at our peak, we were up to 220 people and then essentially had to let go everybody or almost everybody.
So you picked yourself up, and I'm assuming the next step is then you started working for Microsoft, right?
Actually, for a short
time. Or you went back to Oracle.
I went back to Oracle for a short time, ran their global supply chain SWAT team, and then came to Microsoft in 2003.
Right. And so what happened after that? I mean, you've gone through two startups. You've gone to Oracle twice. Now you're at Microsoft. You're kind of learning the corporate game.
Yes.
But something's not dying within you, I'm assuming, right?
So at Microsoft, initially I was in the enterprise sales group and Again, had a very successful career there. And then Microsoft got very serious about the cloud, and I started at the Windows Azure sales team in the central region and built that up.
Yeah.
And as part of that, I got to see a lot of other startups and got to see the exciting world of the cloud.
So a lot of them were diving into this Windows Azure usage. I mean, you were seeing people come up with their own ideas and wanting to use the cloud. What did you start putting together in your head when you started seeing these startups kind of rushing towards this Azure space and leveraging this?
So the remarkable thing was the not just the number of startups, but the variety of startups,
right.
Meaning it wasn't just focused on one industry or trying to solve a consumer problem or trying to solve an enterprise problem. The Azure was being used by companies all sizes. They were being used, it was starting to be used by very large companies as well as startups.
Yeah.
And when I saw the success that some of these startups were having and the sort of the low friction or the low barrier to entry, it was truly amazing. I'd never seen anything like that in my fairly lengthy career prior to that. So that's when I was convinced that, you know, that it's you need a good idea, of course.
Yeah.
But if you do have it and you do have the right people with you, you can make a very successful
company.
So then
how did you get to this team? How did you actually end up as the chief revenue officer at Solomo?
Liz Eversole, who is the CEO at Solomo, I've known Liz for 10 years, and we have been in touch all along. And Liz started working with the Azure space about 2 years ago with a small sort of consulting, mobile application consulting firm. Mm-hmm. And I met her a few times in my role as the Azure director and started talking to her about it and discussing not just helping her with her current consulting business, but that's when the product idea came about and we decided, yes, this has legs and this is meaningful.
So you join Liz, Solomo starts to grow, but I want to like bring this back to two patterns that have actually emerged from this history you have, which is in Microsoft, you actually had this entrepreneurial vision and you were able to foster this and come up with a great product idea, right? Which is exactly what the BizSpark program does when they work with startups to help grow their product idea.
Yeah.
For people out there who are trying to get launched and they want to work with Microsoft, I'm just, how did you cultivate this in yourself?
Yeah.
I mean, was this something that was just inherent, or was this something that was part of some kind of exposure you had?
Yes, I think it's a little bit of both. The great thing of being inside of Microsoft and seeing how that operated and understanding it, I knew that if I joined a startup and we launched something, that there would be the right level of support from Microsoft.
Yeah.
We were committing 100% to the Microsoft platform, to the Windows Azure platform, and I knew the kinds of support that existed. I think that is the big challenge for a lot of startups, is they sort of flounder on their own, not realizing that partnering with large companies like Microsoft or others who have programs that can help them goes a long way.
Yeah.
So I had that confidence that I could get to the right people inside Microsoft and leverage the right programs. And one of the biggest challenges that any startup has is finding customers.
Yeah.
It's easy to have, I wouldn't say it's easy to have, but many people have good ideas and you can build a product, but at the end of the day, you have to find customers for it. And especially if you're targeting the enterprise space, you're going after large customers, and it's not easy to break in without any brand recognition. That's where I think that's the biggest value that Microsoft brought to us, is the ability to use the extended Microsoft sales force and get introductions into some of these large enterprise customers.
So, and you were able to grow very fast once you realized that secret sauce, basically.
Correct.
That's one of the secret sauces, I'm sure, of what makes the company grow.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking to startups out there now and you're and you're sort of showcasing what it is you've done with Microsoft in partnership with us, is there something that they should know about how to approach the company to kind of get that stuff going? I mean, is there sort of like a a secret formula for like, I mean, because it's a big company, yes. how do you knock on the door and actually get that going?
Correct. You have to be very clear what your value proposition to Microsoft is in addition to the customer. Obviously, you have to have a strong solution that appeals to the customer. But at the same time, you have to know what motivates people in Microsoft and what are their goals and how do you align to their goals.
Sure.
So that you help them achieve their goals and which in turn helps you.
Do you think working as a team on your startup helps everybody kind of get a kind of a visibility into how to go out there and approach customers? I mean, one of the things I find fascinating about you is that you came from India, you moved to Berkeley, you were in the academic world, and you were kind of this very serious, I'm assuming very serious, studious kind of guy, and then suddenly, like magic, you were like, I'm gonna do a startup. You know, I'm gonna join a startup.
Yep.
Was it the reaching out and being able to be part of a team and collaborate together, or was it just like you just needed to have a space for your vision, or how does that work for you?
Yeah, I think it's got a lot to do with the environment you're in. Okay, early on being in the Bay Area, that was the right environment. And when you see other people succeeding around you, that gives you the confidence that you can do it. And it's like, hey, I know so-and-so, and I grew up with him, or he's my neighbor, and he succeeded, and I saw what he did, and I can do the same.
Yeah.
And it gives you, so I think a lot of it has to do with the environment.
Do you feel that in your work, and this will be one of my last questions to you, but do you think in your work with Microsoft, I know you've worked with Sunil Mane, who's based in Chicago, helping you build out that infrastructure, do you get that same confidence in working with someone like Sunil?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, she has been extremely beneficial. Again, knowing, understanding where she comes from, I think was the biggest thing that I could tap into. Mm-hmm. And then she's helped us in many, many unexpected ways. So there is, of course, access to direct programs within Microsoft, but there is also access to other people, to the venture community scene in Chicago, to the press and to other folks, which ultimately makes a big difference to the analyst community, et cetera.
Which reminds me of a question I wanted to ask you is, I guess Chicago has changed a lot since you initially moved here after, I guess after the IPO or during the IPO of the
just
first
before
company.
It.
Yeah. Mm. What makes it different today in 2013 than I guess, 12 or 15 years ago?
I would say the startup scene in Chicago now is very vibrant, and Chicago previously was very sort of one-dimensional in terms of financial services oriented. There were a lot of sort of small firms popping up, typically PhD from University of Chicago or something, very oriented towards the financial sector. The big difference now is there's startups in all sectors. There's great technology startups. There's, of course, startups in healthcare and biotech, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But it's a vibrant place for technology startups. And the other big thing is access to capital.
Yeah.
There is a very active VC community now in Chicago so a startup today does not have to rely on funding from the coasts. So there is a big enough pool here. And a very dedicated pool of VCs who are interested in seeing Midwest-based companies succeed.
So
essentially, that's what we tapped into.
Well, speaking of success, I wish you all the best in your success. And you know, as you grow on the Microsoft Cloud and as this company gets going more and more, I mean, I hope to hear more from you and what you're doing. So thanks for spending time with us.
Thank you, Doug.
You're welcome.